Now, I want to wrap up this intro by saying we'll give to you today what a portion of what we have been doing over in the student ministries all summer. It's a summer series. And so Maddie talked a little bit about it, what we do on Wednesday nights. And so here's the pattern we've been doing. On Wednesday nights, we ask a question that is a crucial question that every student needs to wrestle with. And there are seven questions that every student should wrestle with before they go to college, but we'll wrestle with these throughout our lifetime. Seven questions to ask ourselves. Then there are seven principles, obviously, that go with those seven questions. And these principles are seven principles all of us would be wise to apply in our lives. Now, can I let the cat out of the bag? These are seven principles that no matter what age you are, these are things that we all should be, need to be, must be, will be blessed by if we apply these principles. The beauty of doing it in student ministry is you get to hone in on illustration example, and you get to talk about what it looks like to be a middle schooler and a high school and how do we apply it there. Whereas we're going to take it a little bit broader here this morning. So if you're a middle schooler or high schooler that was here a couple of Sundays ago, this is going to be virtually the same thing. So you can actually help clarify for mom and dad and anyone else, whatever it is that I mess up to this morning. Seven principles. I'm not going to walk you through what those seven principles are. All I'm going to do is sit on one principle that we have just for this morning. And that is your friends will largely determine the direction and quality of your life. Your friends will largely determine the direction and the quality of your life. Now, a friend of mine named Stuart Hall and then a guy named Andy Stanley wrote a book several years ago, The Seven Checkpoints. And so these principles, most come out of them. We owe a great deal to them in terms of terminology and wording. We've altered only a few things here and there, but let this sit for just a minute. Who you choose to invest in and who you choose to let invest into you is in large part going to determine the way you choose to go and also the quality of your life as you choose to go. I bet there's no one here who would seriously disagree with that. We may disagree with some nuances. We may say you may be overemphasizing the impact there, but none of us, I think, would really truly disagree with our friends. In many ways, shape who it is that we become. So here's the question for you. The question we asked on that Wednesday night, the principle I just gave you, but here's the question for you. Who will be my support? When I was in high school, I worked a construction job. And so I did it only for a brief period of time because the friend of mine, her father, was a contractor, and he needed some very short-term help. And so I go onto this construction site, and I'm pretty green. You've heard me talk about this before. Both of my brothers are handymen, that they can do things with their hands. They can build things. They can see things. They can understand things. I use this thing more than I use these things. And so when I walk onto a construction site, I'm going, wow, there's a lot of cool stuff that's here. Now, I know how to paint a wall. But I don't know all the ins and outs. And so I walk up and I saw there's this very obvious beam in the middle of a room. And it just seems like it's just standing there. And it's got wood up here. It's got wood down here. And it's just this big old pole that's just going up. And is this the only thing in the dead center of the room? Why is it here? Now, I was a part of the crew that was supposed to come in and to deconstruct. So I'm there to break things up. That's why they brought me in there. Here's a sledgehammer. Go to town. You don't have to be very intelligent to do this, Dave. So I'm thinking this is going to be the first thing in this room that I need to knock down. Who cares about the walls or the things like that? I want to knock this thing. So I have my sledgehammer, and I begin making my way to it, and praise God, an older, wiser man makes his way over to me and says, "You really don't want to do that." And I said, "But I thought we're here to break this room down." He said, "Yep, but you don't want to start with that right there." He then explained it is a beam that is holding up another beam that is also holding up a floor. He called it a support beam. That support was there holding things in place. It was there keeping things where they needed to be. And if that support was taken out, guess what would happen to everything else? It all comes crashing down. Can I ask you, who is your support? Who is there coming alongside of you and saying, I know what your goals are, what your ambitions are, I know what your hopes and dreams are, and I want to help you get to there. Who are you a support for? Who are you coming alongside? I know what your hopes are. I know what your dreams are. I know what your values are. I want to come alongside of you and to support this life that you really want to pursue. These are called healthy friendships. What we really need in life are healthy friendships. And so the question for us this morning is, who will be my support? Proverbs 18:24, and I'm going to be reading in the New Living Translation this morning. It's a wonderful translation. We normally read from the ESV, but for this particular summer series, we decided to go with New Living because in many ways, I like it better. Here's what Proverbs 18:24 says. There are friends who destroy each other, but a real friend sticks closer than a brother. Now, here's what the scriptures are acknowledging. There are what we have in life called friends, and sometimes those friends can actually destroy one another. We can be a part of the deconstruction process of another person. Others can do that in our lives. There are friends that are out there that will devour each other. It says, but there are also those friends who actually are going to stick closer. This is a wonderful word in the original language, and it is an adhesive. There are those who stick so closely, they grab such a firm grasp of one another that they actually hold each other accountable. The word. They are helping to hold each other up to the standard of life that they want to live in. There are friends that are going to remove the support beam. But there are other friends who are going to come alongside and they're going to help you become who you want to become. And you're going to help them become who it is that they want to become. Ultimately, who it is that God has called us to be. There are friends. Can I give you just real quickly three categories of friends? If you're a note taker, I think this will be helpful for you. If you're not a note taker, then you're not a note taker. So that's fine. Three types of friends. This is just language that I came up with. No psychologist or counselor or other wise person has given me this insight. This is just, you'll see how brilliant I am in this. We have casual friends. I'm going to define a casual friend in this way. They are people we see with some regularity in our routine schedule, but we don't seek them out from our routine. In other words, there are people we come in contact with enough regularity that we know what their name is. We may even know a little bit more about their families. We may know what their work is. Maybe they're work colleagues. Maybe they're friends in our class that we have in school. Maybe they're friends in our neighborhood. We see them with some level of regularity, but we're not going to seek them out outside of our normal routine of life. These are just casual friends. We like being around them. Then we have close friends. These are people that we seek out with some regularity, but we don't rely upon them with our greatest needs in life. In other words, we seek them out with a little more consistency. We want to be around them. We really love being around them, but we're not going to rely upon them when it comes to our greatest hour of need in life. These are our close friends. And then we have a third category, and this is, you ready for this word? Closest. Now, I personally don't like the term best friend. I'm not going to be the word police. I'm not going to go on that. But to imply that there is one single person who is best above everyone else, no other possibility, that's fine. If you have a friend that you're closer to than you, that's fine. David and Jonathan seem to be closer. Jesus seemed to be closer to John than any other person. That's fine. I'm just going to call it our closest friends. Now, these are the people that we seek out and we rely upon with our greatest needs. It's not just that we like being with them. It's not just that we love being with them. We must be with them. In our greatest hour of need, we must be with these types of people. Now, for the rest of the sermon, I'm going to center in on just that group of people right there who are our closest friends. Who is the support? Who is it that I'm investing into and they're investing into me? Who am I influencing and who is influencing me to the greatest depth of level? Now, one more thing, you'll notice this. Now, let's just say we're going to put our casual friends here, close friends here, and then closest friends here. The further we go down in depth of friendship, the greater the influence is going to be in both directions. We ought to have a lot of casual friends in which there is some level of influence in our life and some level of influence in our life towards them. We ought to have casual friends in which there's some level of influence. Could be influence the way we dress, or could be influence the shows that we watch, whatever it may be in life. We might influence us in the foods that we eat. When we get to that close friendship level, there's going to be a greater depth of influence. In other words, I want to be influenced more by you, and I want to influence you more than my casual friends. Now, here's what I really believe. As a Christian, I am a professing Christian. I really believe that there was this guy who lived many, many years ago named Jesus. And I really believe he came to the earth and lived the life that we could not live. He then died a death that we should have died. And then I believe that on the third day, dead on Friday, but alive again on Sunday, on the third day, he rose again from the grave. He ascended back into heaven after several days of walking around, making himself available, making sure the mission that the church got that. And then he sits right now at the right hand of God. That's a metaphor. And he is interceding on our behalf. I really believe that this guy named Jesus exists. And I ought to have close friends in my life who do not believe that. Now, why? Because where's the greatest mission field? It's with our friends. And if I'm never allowing anyone to come in, and if I'm never walking into their life in any kind of depth, are they ever going to trust what it is that I say? They need to see from a little bit closer view how it is that this whole Christian life gets lived out. They need to see me at my best, and they need to see me at my worst, and they need to hear, most of all, that I need Jesus just as much today as I did 30-ish years ago when I came to faith the first time. I need to have close friends in my life who do not know Jesus. And by the way, all truth is truth, and there are many close friends who have impacted me, have given me some true things to work on, and they don't know Jesus. So yes, most of the world does not know who he is. Most of the world would not fit into the category of casual friends for me. I don't know most of the world. I have a very limited scope of knowledge of people. A lot of casual friends, fewer close friends. And I sure hope that a good portion of those are those that don't yet know Jesus. The other thing that we ought to know about this order here is the further we go down the list, the more I think we ought to be driven or maybe listen to the opinions of what our friends have to say about us. You know, one of the great mistakes that we make in life is we make so many decisions based on people that are not even on this chart. We make decisions in life because of things that people who aren't even friends think about us and say about us. As a general rule of thumb, I want to be in a place in life where I just don't care a whole lot what people think about me who are not my friends. Now, that doesn't mean I want to be callous and hardened. It doesn't mean that I want to just say whatever I want to say, whenever I want to say it, regardless of the consequences. It means I don't want to be driven in life by the opinions of people who are not even my friends. But the closer you are in friendship, the more I want to listen to what it is that you have to say. And if I have wounded you, I really want to take into account, what are my words doing to people that I love the most? So Ecclesiastes tells us about what life looks like with this final group, this closest friends, the ones that we want to be intentional about pursuing and letting them pursue in our lives. If you would, I know we're later in the sermon, but if you would, in honor of God's word, stand as I read from Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 through 12. It says this: two people can accomplish more than twice as much as one. They get a better return for their labor. If a person falls, the other can reach out and help. But people who are alone when they fall are in real trouble. And on a cold night, two under the same blanket can gain warmth from each other. But how can one be warm alone? A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two can stand back to back and conquer. Three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken. You may be seated. Now, very quickly, what's he saying in this passage? The writer of Ecclesiastes, I think it's a guy named Solomon. Other scholars would disagree with that. That's okay. It's not particularly important. God is the one who gave us these words for us to hear. Is what it says: two people can accomplish more than they would if they were simply alone. This is common sense, isn't it? If two people get together on a project, they likely are going to come up with better ideas. They actually are going to do more in the process. They can work for a little bit longer hours, if you will, but they're likely going to come up with something that's better in the long run. I've used this illustration before, but my wife and I giggled and giggled and giggled at a study that we saw, and I cannot remember if the show was Dateline or 60 Minutes or whatever it was, but there was this fascinating study. And so they're looking at children that were between the ages, I believe, of 5 and 9. I think this is where the research was. And between the ages of 5 and 9, they did a project to see, are there differences already early in life between boys and girls? And so they had decisions that were to be made by individuals. And what they found is that when one girl was added to another girl, these girls actually made better decisions in the process. You add a third girl into the equation, better decisions resulted from three girls being together. Now, once the fourth girl was added, things got a little more complicated and there was a little more argue, et cetera, on that. Here's what they found about boys. You add one boy to the equation, they made worse decisions together than they would have had they been alone. You add a third boy into the equation, they made colossally worse decisions, the three of them, than if there were just two of them, and certainly more so than if there were just one of them. Every boy that was added got monumentally more stupid. What he is saying in this passage, excluding 5 to 9-year-old boys in the process, is if you add someone to the equation, generally speaking, you're going to be better off. You can accomplish more. Second thing he says is that two people are more persistent together than they would be alone. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. In your journey in life, when you are making a direction this way, you're making a change in your life, you know that you've got to change, you know there's something in you that's got to be different. If you're going to go this way, trying to learn a new habit, how easy is it to fail at that habit and then to quit? But if you have one who's walking with you on this journey and sees you down the ground and says, let's get up. Come on, let's go. If you fall, you've got someone to help you up. Rather than if you fall, a person goes, do you see where you are? How did you get there? That's a toxic friend. A healthy friend comes along and helps you up. You become a toxic friend when you just look at a distance and say, whew, I want nothing to do with that person. Or you can be a healthy friend when you make your way and say, let's go. Two are more persistent than they would be alone. Third thing he says is two people are healthier together than they would be alone. He uses an illustration of lying down at night and the travel in this particular region. It would get cold in the evening. And so when you lie down together, it got cold. But if you got two bodies in closer proximity, the body heat from one another would actually warm each other up. Two the last thing he says, two people are safer together than they would be alone. A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two that are standing back to back can lean in on one another, be supported by one another, and face outward and work on the enemy that's coming from without. In light of the sermon series we just heard, let this one sink in. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. Do you have a friend? And are you the kind of friend that goes and stands back to back and you go to labor on behalf of this other friend? And the primary way that you're going to labor on behalf of another friend is right here. Are you the kind of friend that labors on behalf of your friends? Two are better than one because they're safer. Very simple way to sum this up is just asking you one primary application question for you to ponder and to consider. If you're going out to eat today with your family, I would highly encourage you to take some of these questions that we have, discuss this as a family, but please don't miss this one. It won't be on that list. Please don't miss this one. Write it down. Am I providing the support for my friends that I want my friends to provide for me? Because if you want to have great friends, closest friends, godly friends, healthy friends, if you want to have that, guess what step number one is? You become that. You be that kind of friend. And if you are that kind of friend, can I give you a promise? When others see that in you, the kind of friend that you want, when the kind of friend that you're looking for, that you're praying for, when others see that you are that kind of friend, those people who are looking for that will come and seek you out. Am I becoming the kind of friend that I want to be? Your friends will largely, my folks, determine the direction and the quality of your life. So my question to us this morning is this: who will be our support? Jesus is a friend that sticks closer than a brother. Jesus will always be your support. And today, if you don't have a friend, I would encourage you, go to the greatest friend you will ever have in life, and it is the person of Jesus.